I'm psychologist Dr. Michael Broder, welcoming you to this program I call How to Overcome Your Anxiety in the Shortest Possible Period of Time. Anxiety, and both its causes and effects, are among the most common problems that I treat as a psychotherapist. You'll see as we progress through this program that anxiety can take on many different forms and degrees of intensity. It can be relatively mild, the variety that just about everyone experiences at one time or another, and it can be so severe that it borders on being debilitating, or it can be anything in between. In this program, I'll tell you all about the nature of anxiety, how you can recognize it, and how you can learn to control it so that it doesn't get a chance to control you. Throughout the program, there will be numerous exercises and visualizations that you can do either on a regular basis or simply when you're feeling anxious. These exercises will help you to understand your anxiety and what triggers it. In addition, they'll help you to put much of what is discussed throughout the program to work for you immediately. Feel free to stop the tape at any time you need a moment to reflect or to merely digest what's being said and how it may apply to you and your situation. It's important that you listen to this entire program. Some of the things that you'll hear will very much hit home for you. At the same time, you'll notice that other things may not apply to you at all. Some parts of this program you'll want to listen to over and over again. You may even find it helpful to keep a paper and pencil handy so that you can write down certain key items that you may want to refer to often. I hope that, as others have, you'll find this program to be an important source of support that's always at your disposal whenever you feel a need for it. As you listen, you'll begin to gain a general understanding of the phenomena we call anxiety. At the same time, you'll recognize what specifically triggers those feelings of anxiety in you. You'll get an understanding of how your body and your mind react to most of your outside stressors that trigger anxiety, as well as those you manufacture all by yourself, mainly by how you think about certain people, places, and things in your life. You'll soon realize that when your reaction to something outside of yourself is the one of anxiety, that even though you can't always control what's happening on the outside, you can just about always learn to regulate and ultimately control what your internal reaction is to an external event. Since anxiety is, in reality, an inside job, so are the very tools that will bring your anxiety under control. They are all within you, and this program will help you to discover these tools. So before going any further, let's start with a frame of reference. I'd like you to make a list of all the things that you believe make you anxious. Throughout this program, you can add to or subtract from that list as you see fit. You may want to turn the tape off and do this now, then turn the tape back on when you're ready to continue. I'd also like you to make another list now. And once again, keep this as a frame of reference. Think for a moment about all the things that you would do or would like to attempt only if you could become totally free of anxiety. That is, if you could master control over your anxiety in such a way that you may have never believed was possible. If that were to happen, what would you do differently? Once again, you may want to turn off the tape, make this list, and then turn the tape back on when you're ready to continue. The two lists that I've asked you to make are just for your own eyes. Change them at will. You may find it helpful to keep them handy throughout this program and refer to them often as you do some of the exercises that I'll suggest you try later on. But for right now, I'd like you to have an understanding of just what anxiety is and specifically how it may be affecting you. Anxiety disorders affect approximately 10% of all people at any given time. Although there are many different classifications of anxiety disorders, and we'll talk about practically all of them later on in this tape, we'll focus in this program on the factors that most forms of anxiety have in common. Anxiety has most often been called the fear of the unknown, but as we'll see in a moment, that definition doesn't really hold up anymore, because if you think about it, which I'll help you to do, you'll probably see precisely what fear is behind the anxiety you feel when you're feeling it. But first, let's take a look at the more straightforward emotion of fear. Biologically, humans, like most animals, have been equipped with a fear response. That is, when there's an impending danger, we feel the tendency toward flight or fight. Now think about that. When you're feeling fear, chances are your instinct is either to run away, that is, to somehow flee, or to put up a fight against whatever it is that's frightening you. Panic, of course, is an extreme manifestation of fear that can be debilitating. When you panic, you sometimes freeze up and put yourself right in the line of fire of whatever it is you're intensely fearing. Our instinct toward fear is what helped us to survive as a species. But in today's world, it's rare that our fear response will ultimately help us. In fact, there's plenty of evidence to show that fear and anxiety more often do a whole lot more to wreak havoc, to the extent that they're present, than to do anything that we really consider helpful. Now, anxiety is physiologically identical to fear, and even panic in its extreme form. But the main difference between anxiety and fear is that fear is about something specific, and that makes your fear response healthy or appropriate. Behind every appropriate or rational fear, there is generally some actual danger. On the other hand, anxiety is not connected to an actual danger or dire threat that might put your life in true jeopardy. When you're feeling healthy fear, you'll usually feel motivated to take some kind of action to reduce the danger. This is the action that your fear was meant to take against the danger you experience. However, anxiety often leads to inaction and may cause you to stifle yourself and thus avoid the very things that you want to do or wish you could do. When fear is healthy and rational, it's very rarely shameful. In fact, most people who have fought in wars have talked about how fear saves lives. On the other hand, you may easily attach a great deal of shame to anxiety. For example, if you turn down a speaking engagement that you wished you could accept mainly because you were anxious about it, chances are you would feel some degree of shame about your avoidance. Appropriate fear usually disappears as soon as the impending danger is gone. Anxiety, by contrast, can linger and linger and linger and even take on a life of its own, especially where you make yourself ashamed of it. Now, the physiological symptoms of anxiety may include shortness of breath, pounding heart, sweating, blushing, weakness in your legs, hot or cold flashes, butterflies in the stomach, and/or constriction of the throat or chest. Psychologically, your response can range from mild shyness to withdrawal from others who you're less than completely comfortable with, and from worry or nervousness to the belief that you're going to go crazy or even have a heart attack and die. Some anxious people feel detached from their bodies or have a sense of being totally stressed out or a feeling of certain doom. Some other symptoms of anxiety include concentration difficulties, racing thoughts, insomnia, and the feeling of loss of control. These are all merely symptoms. Conquering anxiety involves getting to the underlying factors that cause it. It is true that some anxiety may even be good, but only to the extent that it serves to get you going and to help you to become motivated in certain areas of your life where you can use a bit of a push. Or in some cases, anxiety may signal you that something in your life needs a certain degree of attention. But the fact is that most anxiety is really some form of self-doubt, And if we can call it a disease for a moment, perhaps anxiety is the only disease whose ultimate cure is to live with, sometimes even ignore, but in any case, to actually face whatever it is that you're anxious about, within, of course, the guidelines and limits that you, in fact, choose for yourself. So if anxiety is not, as I said a moment ago, really the fear of the unknown or of something really dangerous, what then is it the fear of? In other words, what are the real factors behind our anxieties? They can be any or all of the following themes or any variation or combination of them. So let me name a few of them and see how many you can identify with. There's the fear of criticism, that if you do or say what it is that you wish to do or say, that you'll be criticized. Or the fear of rejection, where you believe that if someone rejects you, it means terrible things about you. The fear of failure, where you believe that if you do not achieve a particular thing up to a particular standard, that you just plain won't be able to handle life's problems. And incidentally, the so-called fear of success is in reality the fear of failure in disguise. Many people sabotage their efforts to become successful out of the fear that they'll become successful and then lose whatever it is that they've achieved, which is perceived on some level as being much worse than never achieving it at all. Anxiety is often the fear of change, and of course that can prevent you from accomplishing those very goals and making those very changes that you cherish the most. Sometimes it's feeling fear itself that you fear, which is often experienced as a phobia. An example of this is agoraphobia, which, in its extreme form, can render you completely afraid to leave your home because you're really terrified that you'll be anxious if you do. Some people have a fear of death that's so strong that it prevents them from enjoying life. That's one reason that many people have anxiety regarding certain occasions and life milestones, such as birthdays, that can remind them of their mortality. Or anxiety can be the fear of losing control in any given situation, or about life in general. Fears of poverty, being alone, being isolated, and being abandoned are often merely expressions that come under the umbrella of anxiety. Perhaps the most common form of anxiety is what we call performance anxiety, examples of which include going for a job interview, asking for a promotion or raise, getting ready for a blind date or a first date with someone new, having sex, making a speech or presentation, dealing with authority figures, or taking an important test or exam. When you point to situations such as these as triggering your anxiety, you really have performance anxiety or self-consciousness about your own performance. That's the culprit or the underlying feeling that all of these examples have in common. In fact, a recent survey has shown that those seven items, a job interview, asking for a promotion or raise, a blind or first date, sexual activity, making a speech, dealing with authority figures, or taking an exam, are the most common triggers of performance anxiety. First, let me say that performance anxiety in and of itself is not a bad thing, at least not totally a bad thing. It's been shown that a little bit of performance anxiety or concern can actually improve your performance and make you aware that you'd better do some appropriate self-monitoring. But performance anxiety becomes a real problem when it actually hurts your performance. So let's take a look at how this happens. Let's say, for instance, that you're going for a job interview. A little bit of anxiety may even help you. It can actually keep you on your toes. But if your anxiety becomes too visible to the person interviewing you, you could come across as being quite unsure of yourself, and you could thereby blow the interview. The same would occur with taking a test, where some concern is actually optimal, but where too much anxiety can cause you to forget the answer and fail the test. Then the very thing that you fear the most comes true. Likewise, people who so intensely fear a first date and visibly show it often do the very thing that they most fear, which is to completely turn their date off by appearing awkward and uncomfortable. Social anxiety of this type is extremely common. It's the feeling most associated with shyness, which can be quite an extreme social inhibitor if you let it be. Fear of public speaking is also commonly associated with performance anxiety. In fact, I've seen surveys that have shown public speaking to be the thing that people fear the most. And in one survey of the top 20 most common fears that I saw recently, the number two item was dying in a fire. Can you imagine how speaking to a group of people is statistically perceived as more scary than dying in a fire? Yet this is the way a large group of people rank ordered their fears when the survey was done. Performance anxiety in its most extreme form can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. For example, if you're feeling a lot of anxiety regarding the possibility of giving a talk and forgetting your lines, your anxiety may be the one factor that will cause that very thing to happen. Most sexual dysfunctions that are not medical in nature have as their immediate cause performance anxiety. Thus, the fear that you will lose an erection during sex often is the very cause of your loss of erection. And anxiety about not having an orgasm will often prevent your having one. In other words, extreme self-consciousness or embarrassment often becomes more debilitating than the actual thing you may be embarrassed about. Think about how this has affected and may be continuing to affect you in your life. Now, underneath practically all of the different forms of anxiety that we've talked about is a mental process that one of our most renowned psychologists, Dr. Albert Ellis, founder of Rational Emotive Behavior Therapy, calls catastrophizing or awfulizing. This occurs when you firmly plant it in your head that the worst possible thing that may occur actually will occur. And then you go one step further and tell yourself, when it occurs, it'll be a catastrophe, or I won't be able to handle it. I won't be able to live it down, or it'll be just plain awful, or even I'll die. Sound familiar? Now, to the extent that you have these anxiety-producing, self-defeating thoughts and attitudes, your anxiety level most likely will greatly rise, and your performance will notably decrease. I think you can see how this works. It's a vicious circle. You catastrophize or tell yourself that the worst will or may happen, and then you avoid doing what you want to do altogether, which makes whatever it is you're anxious about feel that much more difficult the next time. Or your anxiety will decrease your performance, which can serve to reinforce your self-doubt. Doubting yourself will then increase your feelings of anxiety and panic. In the case of performance anxiety about sex, your anxiety or panic is felt not only as the dreaded feeling, but also it physically prevents you from performing. Now, let's talk about how to attack this thinking process that we call catastrophizing or awfulizing. That is, taking a situation that's merely potentially unpleasant and turning it into something you feel is absolutely dreadful or horrible. The good news is that to the extent that your anxieties and fears are learned, you can also unlearn them. For example, when treating a case of sexual performance anxiety, which results in sexual impotence in men, we can help these men take a non-catastrophizing attitude, which is to see that they may fail, but are never complete failures. Then they actually succeed and even increase their sexual desire. This happens as the anxiety lessens. And what makes the anxiety lessen is the fact that no performance is necessary. Suppose you have performance anxiety about public speaking. You may then vividly imagine yourself failing badly and show yourself that this would be uncomfortable but hardly awful. If you're a person who confuses caution with catastrophizing, remember, caution is good, but catastrophizing handicaps you. The difference is that catastrophizing usually provides you with about 100 times more caution than you'll ever need to pull off whatever it is that you're trying to cautiously accomplish. By recognizing that you're catastrophizing, you'll prevent it from becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy, and your performance will almost certainly improve. Then you can experience whatever anxiety you still have as excitement, which is a very positive emotion. Incidentally, excitement and anxiety are also physiologically identical, just as anxiety and fear are. It's only the underlying belief, that is, what you tell yourself about a situation, that determines whether you feel the positive emotion of excitement or the negative emotion of anxiety. So to stop catastrophizing, first it's extremely important to recognize when you're doing it. When you feel anxiety, what are your thoughts? Take time out to ask yourself, what feelings am I creating? What am I thinking right now to create them? What am I telling myself? What is it that I'm really anxious about? Using this example of public speaking once again, ask yourself, what really is the worst possible thing that could happen if I gave a poor speech? Will my world really come to an end? Remind yourself that your feeling of anxiety is trying to convince you that there is a real danger. So what is the danger? What is truly the worst possible thing that can happen? Think about an item that you're feeling anxious about, either now or that you might tend to feel anxious about later, and ask yourself that question right now. You may want to turn the tape off and think about this for a moment or two. You may even find it helpful to write down your anxiety-creating thoughts. Turn the tape off and do this now, then come back when you're ready to continue. Let's stay with the example for a moment of performing poorly when giving a talk. If you've asked yourself, what's the worst thing that could happen if I give a poor performance, and your answer is I would look foolish, the next question to ask yourself is, so what? What's the worst thing that could happen if I look foolish? In the grand scheme of things, will this really be as bad as the poor results that I will bring on due to my anxiety? Are you telling yourself that other people will be focusing on you with the intensity that you focus on yourself? If that's the case, ask yourself, is that really likely? After all, in your lifetime, you've probably seen many people look foolish. Are you as hard on them as you are on yourself? If you're telling yourself, but that's the way I feel, very anxious, ask yourself another question. Are your feelings facts? Mine certainly aren't. They usually coincide with facts, but not always. So in essence, feelings sometimes are and sometimes aren't facts. But to the extent that you treat facts and feelings as though they're always the same, you're subjecting yourself to a great deal of distortion. Do you tell yourself that no one else feels this way? If that's the case, then you're probably giving yourself quite a bum rap. I don't think I've ever met anyone who hasn't felt some degree of anxiety, self-consciousness, and self-doubt at certain times. If you're telling yourself, I just plain shouldn't feel so anxious, we'll get to some ways that you can address your anxiety about your anxiety later on in this program, but for right now, ask yourself why you shouldn't feel as anxious as you do. Sometimes, merely by accepting the anxiety as another one of those unpleasant life situations that you can't change at the moment, you reduce it. In fact, by facing it and accepting it, You often make it disappear. If you're in a social situation and feeling anxious, are you telling yourself, "Wow, I'm out of my league here. Everyone else is really so confident and look at me"? If that's the case, ask yourself whether you're comparing your insides, something that you know very intimately, with someone else's outsides, which could merely be their facade or pretense. Remember, having anxiety is like wearing an invisible set of handcuffs. Usually you're the only one who knows you're wearing them, but whether it actually holds you back or not, you may still be likely to feel that the only one in the world who's anxious is you. When you're catastrophizing, ask yourself if you're taking things way too seriously, meaning that you assume that the worst possible outcome will happen no matter what you do. If you're telling yourself, because of your anxiety, that you must be a real sickie or a weirdo, and that anyone else who knew how anxious you are would certainly think that of you as well, ask yourself if those other people are really as focused on you as you think they are. After all, most people tend to concentrate on their own issues, not so much on yours. And your self-consciousness stems from the idea that other people are as conscious of you and your failings as you are. Now, if you heard that idea for the first time today, think about how ridiculous you would consider it to be. Take some time now to think about what you may be attributing your anxiety to, and then think about what you can do instead of thinking about your anxiety in the same old handicapping way. What are some new ways that you can think about things? How are you contributing to your own feelings of anxiety? Are you telling yourself that it's absolutely necessary to be liked and approved of by everyone? After all, taking our public speaking example even one step further, realize that even the best orators in the world sometimes do poorly, and certainly have their critics. So to the extent that you perfectionistically demand that other people see you as flawless, you can easily see how you can continue to manufacture a great deal of anxiety. And that goes for your expectations in any area of your life. Do you give yourself permission to be imperfect? If not, then you can easily see how you can make yourself anxious about practically anything. So think about what you're doing to create your anxiety. And come to think about it, you may want to update the list you began at the beginning of this program of things that make you anxious, or rather, that trigger your anxiety, and the things that you would do if you were truly invulnerable to anxiety. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn it back on when you're ready to continue. Now, before going any further, it's important to look at a couple of the more severe forms of anxiety that you and other people may have. This program focuses on dealing with your anxious feelings. However, there are anxiety disorders that are quite severe, such as phobias, where there's a feeling of terror, dread, or even panic when confronted with feared objects or situations. Sometimes, a phobia can be so overwhelming that the desire to avoid whatever you're phobic about can profoundly affect your job, family, social relationships, or any aspect of your life for that matter. For example, agoraphobia, a fear or horror related to being in public places, can be extremely disabling because in its extreme form it could render you housebound. A panic disorder can be a profoundly intense and overwhelming terror that strikes for no apparent reason. Some people suffer this to such a degree that they can't even predict when the attacks will occur. In addition, obsessive-compulsive disorders, or OCD, can be the culprit behind recurrent and persistent thoughts or impulses that can totally consume you. Obsessions are extremely repetitive thoughts, while compulsions are ritualistic and involuntary behaviors that pretend to help you to prevent some undesirable event or to produce a desirable one. When people are compulsive, their ritualistic behaviors in reality have little or nothing to do with the actual situations. An example would be constantly washing one's hands or touching a particular object in a certain way to bring about good luck. These disorders are all beyond the scope of this program and should be treated only by a qualified professional who can evaluate obsessive-compulsive sufferers psychologically and medically to discover the reason for their disorder and the best course of treatment for it. By the same token, if you have a generalized anxiety disorder where your anxiety is not brought on by some external event or by your own thinking, but rather by forces that you cannot identify, you should be treated by an appropriate professional who can determine the extent to which you may benefit from a combination of medication and psychotherapy. Consider such professional treatment if the exercises in this program don't produce noticeable changes. New medical treatments are constantly being developed to help feelings of anxiety or panic that don't respond to self-help or psychotherapy alone. Some medications prescribed are to be taken on an as-needed basis, while others should be taken on a regular basis, at least for a specific period of time. Some forms of anxiety are linked to other disorders, such as depression, and can best be treated through a combination of anti-anxiety and antidepressive medications. Some people receive a great deal of help from beta blockers as well. However, studies have shown that while beta blockers are sometimes helpful for feelings of anxiety, as a side effect, they may tend to impede performance. And remember, anxiety can be a cause or an effect. In other words, if your condition is one of generalized anxiety that's brought on without any provocation that you can identify, then it's possible that you could be attributing your anxiety to virtually anything that's occurring in your life. If you have any questions at all about whether this is what's happening in your situation, then I urge you to get an appropriate evaluation and treatment immediately. A qualified professional can often help you to see results very quickly. By the same token, if following this program does not produce some good measurable results, I would urge you to consider psychotherapy. A short-term cognitive behavioral treatment approach that helps you to change your behavior and the thought processes that produce your anxiety will most likely be quite helpful. What follows now will be a series of activities and exercises that you can use to overcome your anxiety. I urge you to try them all, or whatever combination works for you, in order to quickly bring your anxiety under your control. First, I'd like you to start keeping track of those times when your feelings of anxiety come up. You may want to record the day and time, the actual emotion you experience, and whatever situation was occurring around the time you were feeling anxious. Also, be aware of and record your specific thoughts about situations you believe trigger your feelings of anxiety. For example, let's say you're at work and you're rushing to get a report done for a meeting that's to take place shortly. And say you're feeling nervous and anxious. Here, you would keep track of the times you feel anxious and the situations that you think contribute to your anxiety. And most importantly, what are you thinking about the situations that trigger your anxiety? For example, you may be thinking, I'm going to be in a lot of trouble if I don't have this report finished, or I had better have this done perfectly well, or I'm incompetent, or whatever else your variation of any of these themes may be. This diary of your anxiety will serve a couple of purposes. First of all, it'll help you to think in terms of both external and internal things that you think are making you anxious. In addition, as you progress, you'll hopefully be seeing fewer and fewer items that you upset yourself about. So you'll avoid the trap that many find themselves in when they're trying to understand and overcome their anxiety, which works something like this. Suppose you have weeks without any noticeable or distressing anxiety, but then you experience one or two bouts of anxiety. And then you tell yourself that you haven't progressed at all. You then negate what progress you've made. In other words, just as you could be expecting perfection with anything else in your life, you could be demanding perfection about conquering your anxiety. Well, your feelings don't work that way. What you're aiming for is a major reduction of the times and situations that you feel anxious, as well as a reduction in the intensity of your feelings. So when you refer to your diary, consider the reduction that you observe as an indication of your progress. After you've kept this diary for a couple of days and are used to keeping it, then I'd like you to be aware of the intensity or degree of the feelings you're experiencing and recording. Think of this intensity on a scale of from 1 to 10, with 1 being a mild or minute amount of anxiety, and 10 being such an extreme amount of anxiety that it could be called acute panic. Thus, when you record your anxiety, get into the habit of thinking in terms of precisely how anxious you are. While doing this, avoid the temptation to compare the number that you assign with what you may have assigned in another entry. There will be plenty of time later on for comparisons, but first I'd like you to just get into the habit of keeping track of your anxiety itself, the situation that brought it on or activated it, and your thoughts about the activating situation, all of which, when added together, is what produce your anxiety. Next, refer to your log often, taking a look at the thoughts about those events that you've identified as causing your anxiety, and ask yourself if your thoughts about the anxiety-producing situation are in fact correct. For example, in the situation where you may have been telling yourself that not having the report finished to perfection in time for the meeting would make you incompetent, ask yourself if this is really true. Now, it's quite possible that during that moment when you actually feel anxious, you can't conveniently stop and dispute your anxiety-creating ideas. But later on, once your anxiety has subsided and you have the opportunity to allow yourself to re-examine the situation, in a sense, do an instant replay. Was your thinking about that anxiety-provoking event excessively negative? If someone else you know referred to themselves as totally incompetent when they were merely being late with a report, and if they told you that idea, would you agree with it? Chances are you wouldn't, and instead would encourage the other person to think differently, wouldn't you? Now back to you. Substitute a more accurate or rational thought in the place of your anxiety-producing one. In this case, you may want to say, being late does not render me incompetent. And although being late is not desirable, it's not the great catastrophe that I'm imagining. By keeping a diary and going through this process, you'll come to see what your most vulnerable areas are. And by disputing them and doing some of the other techniques that we'll be talking about a little later, you'll see the intensity of your anxiety dissipate in fairly short order. So get into the habit of asking yourself, what does my irrational side say? And what does my rational side say? And then ask yourself, can I choose to listen to my rational side now? If you're telling yourself, I should have done better than I did, substitute a more accurate affirmation, such as, I did as well as I could at the time, with all things considered. And this, if you think about it, is correct. If you're telling yourself, people will think I look foolish and I'll die of embarrassment, substitute instead, even if someone does think that about me, I'll survive. It's not worth the upset I'm allowing their opinion to have on me. If you're telling yourself I'm stupid, instead, be accurate and at the very worst, recognize that even if your behavior could be called stupid, it's never accurate to allow yourself to overgeneralize that observation by putting down your entire being. In doing this, you put your emotions clearly into your own hands. Even if at times you can't control them right now, knowing that it's possible to control them a little later will make them seem much less threatening. And again, if it doesn't feel right to do this process while your feelings of anxiety are in full bloom, then wait until a calmer time. Most importantly, once you've identified a thought or belief as irrational, self-defeating, and thus not in your best interest to have, refuse to accept it as fact. Let each of your bouts of anxiety be a learning experience. And incidentally, when you look at it that way, you'll find that it's easier than you thought to give yourself credit for actually standing something that you may have wrongly told yourself that you couldn't stand. If you'd like a little practice in rating the intensity of your feelings, make your own customized barometer. Take a piece of paper and number it from 1 to 10, leaving space between each of the 10 numbers. And then put a few examples of different situations that you would rate on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of the degree of anxiety you tend to feel when they occur. An anxiety-provoking situation which you would give a rating of 1, for instance, may be if you're laying in the sun and you observe what could possibly be a rain cloud starting to cover the sun. A rating of 2 could be given to being 15 minutes late for a dinner reservation. You may give a rating of 3 to having to send back food in a restaurant. 4 could be getting caught in a traffic jam. 5 could be having a flat tire when you're on your way somewhere and in a slight rush. 6 may be asking someone that you're attracted to go out on a date when there's a real chance of being turned down. 7 could be waiting outside of your boss's office when there's a possibility of being fired. 8 may be speaking to a very large and intimidating crowd. 9 can be given to a situation where you're waiting to hear a medical report about yourself or a member of your family that's potentially life-threatening. And an example of a rating of 10 could be driving a car that's swerving out of control toward an embankment. But the important thing is to make this barometer as personalized as possible so that you can compare the feelings of anxiety that you produce with your own personal system of rating the intensity. Once you recognize certain items that will predictably cause your anxious feelings to surface, make up a list of things that you can do when you're in anxiety-producing situations. For example, if public speaking is an anxiety-producing situation, think about what you can do when you're up there about to make a speech. What would help you at a time like that? You may find, as I do, that looking for a friendly face in the audience makes it easier. You may find that a bit more preparation is helpful to you, or sometimes even a bit less preparation. If a lot of your anxiety is due to rushing and being in a crunch for time, work on your schedule so that you have less time when you're in such a rush that anxiety will become inevitable for you. Although this is not addressing the underlying problem, it will certainly make your life much easier and once again show you that you have a lot more control than you might ever have thought you did. Generally speaking, the more you know about a given item, subject, or situation, the less you'll make yourself anxious about it. So learn as much as possible about those things on your list that trigger your anxiety. Take a course, read books, Talk to people who do well with what you're afraid to do. Public speaking, dancing, swimming, or whatever your anxiety triggers are. So know your enemy and you'll fear it less. If your anxiety is in connection to a project you're attempting, examine this project thoroughly to see whether you're setting unrealistic expectations for yourself. Sometimes this is the most underplanned part of the project, yet one of the most important. After all, you, the person doing the project, is at least as important as the project itself. If you express your anxiety through worry, and after all, worry is merely the mental expression of anxiety, ask yourself whether the worry that you're doing is in any way helpful to you. Ask yourself if there's anything at all that you have to lose by not worrying. After all, you're most certainly powerless to change an undesirable or dangerous situation that never did or never will happen, aren't you? For example, if you're on an airplane and you're worrying about whether you'll have a safe flight, acknowledge the fact that you're powerless to affect your flight one way or the other. Then work on just simply letting go of those thoughts of doom and gloom that produce your anxiety. You may want to make a list of all those things that you worry about and identify whether any of your worrisome items, any of the worrying you do, is helpful either to the situation or to yourself. You'll probably find that the answer is no. Next, consider your worry an unwanted thought and treat it as such. There are many ways to distract yourself from unwanted thoughts. One way is the old rubber band technique, where you put a rubber band around your wrist and snap it whenever you get an unwanted thought. You'll find that your thoughts will decrease dramatically in intensity, perhaps just by identifying them as unwanted thoughts and treating them merely as undesirable and unnecessary. Some people can stop thoughts just by saying to themselves, "Stop." That changes the focus of your attention when you create worrisome thoughts. Any way that you can distract yourself when having an unwanted thought can be quite helpful. You may find that listening to or thinking about some calming music, reading something that interests you, or having a conversation that takes you in a non-anxious direction are all good ways to distract yourself. They teach you that you have a lot more control over your thoughts than perhaps you ever imagined. Diet and exercise are also important considerations with respect to anxiety. Some of your anxiety could be caused by your caffeine intake or other foods that may have a provoking effect on you. A suitable exercise program may reduce your anxiety as well as other negative emotions and attitudes. A good internist can help you to establish the kind of diet and exercise program that'll benefit you the most, not only with respect to your anxiety, but also with respect to important health considerations as well. Whenever you're anticipating a social situation that could lead you to make yourself anxious, you may want to get a friend to role play with you and to act out the worst possible scenario that could occur. For example, if you're anxious about a first date, you may want to have a friend role play with you your worst nightmare with respect to that date, then turn it into either a laughable or an acceptable situation. This way, when the actual date occurs, whatever happens will be, at least from the standpoint of anxiety, pale by comparison. If you're fearing a job interview, practice with someone who can role-play different situations in which you could find yourself during a job interview. This will perhaps help you to think of some of those things beforehand that you know you'll have wished you said during the actual interview. It will also give you the opportunity to rehearse a very important situation. Even the best actor in the world wouldn't dare go on stage without first rehearsing his or her role. And what is a job interview anyway, but an opportunity for you to play the role of the perfect candidate for that job? Look at it that way, instead of as a situation that's bound to intimidate you, and you'll feel much less panic about it. You can also try what I call an emotional fire drill. This is a visualization exercise with a twist. If you're driving in a car, please save this one for later. While sitting down, close your eyes and imagine a situation that would be extremely anxiety-producing. Imagine it as fully and vividly as you possibly can. See the sights of it. Hear the sounds. Smell the smells of it. Imagine the people in the vicinity. You know what you become anxious about. It could be getting rejected by someone you care about, being laughed at by someone you're attracted to, being in a one-to-one conversation with someone you're trying to impress and completely running out of things to say. You know what the situation could be. Take a moment or two and visualize that situation happening as clearly and precisely as possible. And then imagine the results being just what you most feared they would be. Be aware of how awful you're telling yourself that feared result is, and notice how your feeling of anxiety increases. Now, with your eyes still closed, relabel that feeling of anxiety as excitement, and reframe or change your interpretation of that struggle to that of a challenge. Now ask yourself, what is the worst possible thing that could happen if I really flub this? If all my worst fears vividly came true, I'll look ridiculous, I won't succeed. Notice how, by taking the element of catastrophe away, your anxiety lessens. With a little bit of practice, you'll be able to do this easily. And then you'll have proven to yourself that you can turn an emotion like anxiety completely around simply by choosing a different attitude by which to evaluate the outcome of your failing at something. Next, open your eyes and do an instant replay of the situation. See if you can gain some real perspective on it. How would you advise someone else to handle the situation so as to avert their anxiety? By now, you probably know the answer, at least as it applies to someone else. Try now to avail yourself of that same wisdom. It's yours. You own it. And if you believe you can help yourself with it and actually do so much, much more for yourself than you could ever do to help someone else. Take notes. Make yourself a personal manual about handling that dreaded situation. And do this exercise as often as you need to in order to keep this perspective firmly under your control. Once you've been able to do that, then you're ready to take risks. This is how you'll really prove to yourself that you're a lot tougher than you may have thought, and to show yourself that those things you falsely tell yourself that create your anxiety are much less valid than you may ever have imagined. What is it that you're avoiding because of your anxiety? Make a list of those things. You may want to turn off the tape and do that now, and then turn the tape back on when you're ready to continue. What is it that you want to do in or with your life that you're holding back from doing merely because of your anxiety? Go through each item on your list and do an emotional fire drill in your head for each one. And then take the risks. Face them. Stop running away. As I inferred earlier in the program, if anxiety is a disease, then the cure is to ignore it as much as possible. There are very few diseases that you can say that about, but anxiety, and that is the anxiety that you create for yourself, is one. when taking the risk of failing at something or of being rejected, act as if you have no anxiety. Act as though you were fearless. Whenever you get the urge to stop and retreat or to go backwards, instead, keep going. Ask yourself this question now and add it to your list. What would I do if I were completely fearless? How would I live my life differently? Would I change jobs? Would I make changes in certain relationships? Would I approach people that I would like to approach, whom I may have been avoiding? Would I attempt some tasks that I've only been able to admire people from a distance for attempting? Think about the people you admire the most. Aren't they the ones who are able to take risks and somehow transcend their fear of doing it? What makes you think you can't be one of those people? If anxiety is standing in your way, try ignoring it. You owe it nothing. Walk on and your anxiety will continue to lessen. That attitude is one of the most powerful ways to let this program have the maximum effect on you. Whenever you begin to feel what you know are the physical symptoms of anxiety, unpleasant as they may be, remember these symptoms, such as rapid breathing and heart pounding, are not dangerous. So resist the urge to become unnecessarily anxious about your anxiety itself. When you begin to experience an acute feeling of anxiety, there are several things that you can do in order to simply dissipate that anxious feeling. Breathing deeply and slowly is one of them. You may want to try this exercise now. You can do it with your eyes open or your eyes closed. Imagine your legs being two giant air balloons, and that with each breath you take, imagine you're filling your legs up with air. And as you exhale, all of the air is leaving your body. Try taking 5 slow, deep breaths now. Let's do it together. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale. Exhale. You can continue doing this breathing exercise for as long as you'd like. If you begin to hyperventilate, simply cup your hands over your face and breathe in your own carbon dioxide. That'll quickly stop the hyperventilation. Deep breathing is something that can be done practically anywhere at any time. Many seasoned speakers and performers spend 5 to 10 minutes deep breathing before going on stage. For many years, I did that for a couple of minutes before each of my radio programs. Another way to relax yourself is to tense up your body or parts of it and then release the tension. Tense up each arm and release it. Then tense up each leg and then release the tension. Then tense up your torso area and release the tension. Then tense up your jaw and head and then release the tension. And then finally, tense up your entire body. Try tensing your entire body up 5 or 6 times even. And then release. By tensing and releasing, you'll find that your mental state will follow the relaxation you feel in your body. Another quick exercise that you can do at a time when you're beginning to feel anxious is to close your eyes and imagine a completely safe place, a house that's of your own design. It can even be surrounded by a beautiful meadow. Set up the scene exactly the way you would like it to be. Just imagine yourself being there with absolutely nothing at all to fear. Once again, if you can truly imagine yourself without fear, you'll find that your emotions will follow. And remember what causes most of these emotions, your thoughts. By giving yourself negative images, you're likely to bring about the anxiety. But by giving yourself some positive and calming images, the anxiety will be just as likely to dissipate or to go away. So if you can both remember and use as a frame of reference how you create your anxiety, you can use those same skills to do away with it. Anxiety comes to you when you imagine the worst thing happening and think it's terrible and that you can't handle it. Anxiety dissipates when you imagine yourself going through a bad situation well. This is very important for you to keep in mind so that you can use it as a powerful tool at the right time. Also, accept the fact that regardless of how often you're right or that masterfully you pull things off, sometimes you'll be wrong. And you do have the right to be wrong. Learn to accept yourself the way you are with your warts and failings, and you'll find that what other people think of you is much less important. After all, if what someone thinks of you is based on your performance of the moment, how important to you could they really be anyway? And except for rare life and death matters, which fortunately are very few and far between, are most things in the final analysis really as important as they seem to be? Ask yourself that question often, particularly at the very beginning of those times when you first feel your anxiety coming upon you. If you're still unable to let your anxiety go, ask yourself, could there be another purpose that my anxiety is serving? Can it be keeping me in a relationship that I would otherwise want to leave? Could it be keeping me in a job that I wished I could leave but I'm afraid to risk leaving? If so, face those issues head on. In other words, don't give up until you can really observe your anxiety dissipating. Now go back to your lists of the things that you make yourself anxious about and the things that you would do if instead you were truly fearless or invulnerable to anxiety. Take those lists that I had you start at the very beginning of this program and add to throughout. Now add to it and subtract from it some more. See how which of the exercises that we've talked about so far you can and are willing to apply to those situations that you've identified on your list. I'd like to leave you with a relaxation exercise that you can do virtually any time that you can give it your full attention. If you're driving in a car now, you may want to do this at another time when you can do this exercise safely. Sit comfortably in a chair or lie down. If you sit, don't let your head fall backwards. Close your eyes and think about the last time you were completely relaxed. It could have been on a vacation. It could have been lying outside on a nice, warm, sunny day without anything bothering or distracting you. Or imagine yourself lying in warm water on a raft. Allow yourself a moment or two just to simply relive that relaxing experience. You may want to turn the tape off and do that now, and then turn it back on when you're ready to continue. Now allow yourself to really savor that feeling of relaxation you have right now, and imagine that you have all the time in the world to enjoy it, even if you only have a few minutes. And at your own pace, count backwards from 10 to 1, relaxing more with each breath you take. Tell yourself that at the count of one, you'll be completely relaxed in a deeper way than you've been for a long, long time. Breathe. 10. Breathe. 9. Breathe. 8. Breathe. 7. Breathe. 6. Breathe. 5. Breathe. 4. Breathe. 3. Breathe. 2. Breathe. 1. At the count of 1, you're completely and fully relaxed. You may want to turn the tape off now and just savor this beautiful, glorious feeling of relaxation for as long or as short a period of time as you'd like, then turn the tape back on when you're ready to come back up and continue with your day. Now I'm going to count forward from 1 to 5. At the count of 5, you'll be fully refreshed, fully alert, fully aware, and ready to resume your activities, feeling relaxed and with little or no anxiety. 1. 2. Coming up now. 3. Your eyes are just starting to open now. 4. Coming back into the room. 5. You're back in the room, fully refreshed, and ready to continue your day. Now, this exercise can be done anytime and at any place where you can give yourself the time you need in order to experience this feeling of relaxation. I suggest that you do it once or twice a day, even if it's only for a minute or two. An optimal amount of time for most people is up to 20 minutes. Soon you'll find that you can train yourself to go into your relaxation mode quickly at practically any time that you'd like. And remember, it's pretty hard to be anxious when you're relaxed. I hope that you found and continue to find this program helpful in overcoming your anxiety. Hopefully you've seen that changing your mood rapidly and effectively is something that's clearly within your control. But mastering control of your emotions is a lifelong process and one that the realities of life will test you on constantly. Go back through this tape as often as you need to in order to zero in on the areas where you can still use some help. And please let us know how you're doing. We're very concerned about your progress and welcome any comments about this program that you may have. If we can be of any assistance to you with respect to resources that can help you further, feel free to call or write us. I'm Dr. Michael Broder, wishing you good luck and good health.